The Rights of Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by Norman, CJ's dog. No. Rights of Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS. I could feel the DraftKings people being like, Norman does not present the podcast. We do. And brought to you by Mortgage CS. Become a Mortgage CS Ricky VIP by going to mortgagecs.com/Ricky. Briggs Auction, the official auction of the process at briggsauction.com. LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. And Kinetic Skateboarding, get 9.1% off your first order with code Dave Silver. On the show today, the Sixers win a game, maybe make it a little more difficult than it should have been against the Hornets, but they did win. Also, does Tyrese Maxey get a fair whistle from refs? Is Tobias Harris like having to really pee on your way home? You'll find out more. What do Nick Nurse's gold chains tell us about his sex life? And why are Joe Dumars and Monty McCutcheon lying so obviously? As well, our very own Eliza Hardy-Jones of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez and of War on Drugs joins us later on to talk about her solo career. She has a second solo album coming out in April called Pickpocket, and we will talk about that as well, which you can pre-order right now, the vinyl, and we will put that link in the show notes, and we will talk about it when we have Eliza on. I did mention Kinetic Skateboarding. So I have a Kinetic vest. It's a black Kinetic vest that I like a lot, but they just put up one a couple of days ago, a tan sort of, what's it called? Dickies vest, which is awesome. And I don't think they made very many of them, but it is an amazing piece. I said last time that we were talking about Kinetic, the Kinetic branded stuff, I think, is the stuff that I like best in the store. So get it, go to kineticskateboarding.com. Obviously you'll see a selection of sneakers and stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else. But the clothes are awesome with spring coming. Maybe you need to freshen up the closet a little bit. Go to kineticskateboarding.com. Use code Dave Silver for 9.1% off your first order. And we and our merch partner, Scheibe Vintage Sports, giving away a 96-97 authentic Iverson jersey. Just go to the link in the description of this podcast to register to win. All you got to do is give your email address and you will be registered to win. We'll pull a winner on March 29th. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef. The Josh Harris Joe Buck handshake made it into the intro video. Thank you, CJ.
I noticed that.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who lays down on the ground just to let you know that he's ready to play. That is one Mike Levin.
That's right. CJ always giving us little treats.
Yep, little treats.
Little treats from CJ to us.
Yeah. So, and I also love doing the intro to you about something that happened in the filter in, so nobody has any idea what I'm talking about at all, actually, if they didn't see the filter in. So Sixers beat the Hornets in a game that got a little too close for comfort toward the end. It was a game that I personally would not have been able to handle them losing, even though they have lost games to bad teams before. At a certain point, you just have to beat the shitty teams. What the Sixers did, you know, maybe the offense looked a little better when somebody was missing. A little weird that Mo Bamba is still playing so many significant minutes, but a win is a win is a win is a win is a win.
Yeah, I mean, they're just not good without Joel. It's like as simple as that.
Yeah.
They're not going to become good without Joel. They're not going to start gelling more without Joel. They are simply overtaxed. Every team has taken to just doubling Maxey to get the ball out of his hands.
Yep.
And the rest of the guys are not good enough to win 4-on-3 consistently. God, I would love, whether it's Lowry or Batum, I would love for the role man on the 4-on-3 to be like, to throw a lob to somebody. Like the Warriors get that every single time when it's Steph, Draymond pick and roll. They double the ball handler. Draymond has 4-on-3. it's like Kuminga or Wiggins, or with the Nuggets, it's fucking Aaron Gordon or MPJ. Just like somebody is cutting baseline for an easy lob, and I don't think the Sixers have ever gotten it. And I won it.
It's honestly a combination of two things. Guys that don't catch lobs and so many guys that are such bad passers.
But that's why Batum has made people pay before, but it doesn't seem like, I don't know, that maybe they want to keep the floor spread or they, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it feels like a quick, easy way to beat a 4-on-3 is for that baseline guy to make that cut. And if his man goes with him, then that's a wide open corner three to whoever fills the spot. But it hasn't happened. So,
no.
But they won, and that's fine. And Maxi played well, and we got an iconic Maxi image out of it.
Yes, the smirking at the screen with the blood coming out of his nose.
It was like a snarl, I think. It was pretty cool. He's great.
Yeah.
What a delight
he is. He is a delight, yes.
It's so easy. It's so easy for him to get by bad defenders. It really is. If you're not going to move your... If you're not going to really take it seriously, there's no amount of... Like, he's just going to beat you right-handed. He's going to be like, oh, you're not trying so hard. I'm already by you with my right.
It is nice to have somebody on the perimeter who can punish bad defenders, which we on and off have and have not had over the years. And, you know, Harden obviously had moments of that, but this version of Harden, not quite the same as Harden of 5 or 6 years ago even. So,
for sure.
Yeah.
I think... And this is the thing I've been saying since Joel went down, but like the optimistic opinion is that when Joel is back, they're not going to be doubling Maxi, and then he will have one-on-one matchups.
Which is, by the way, why everybody is better when Joel plays.
Oh my God. Yeah, every single person. Like Buddy Hield, we've only been talking about in the context of like, but it's going to look better when Joel's there, and like Batum being a role player and filling lanes and filling holes, and then Oubre just being able to like attack or close out on just a straight line drive, you know, Mobamba being on the bench would be great. Everybody's going to be so much better when Joel gets back. But Maxi, I think at least like through a couple, I like watching him add elements to his game. Like he didn't get any whistles in that Milwaukee game, and he got to the line 12 times last night. That was nice to see. I really like he drove left with Trey Mann on him. Grant Williams comes to help on the low side, and Maxi sort of just takes a one-legged rhythm fadeaway 6-footer, which he doesn't usually take. It's usually either floater or all the way to the rim, and I like him opening that up to just have options when he gets around there. He had a really nice lefty finish in between defenders to beat the third quarter buzzer. I mean, it's just a great the step back on Nick Smith Jr. that drew an ooh when he shocked the defender, and then an ah when it went
when
in.
When he hit the shot.
It was very nice. It's fun. Yeah. It's fun to watch him do his thing and like be the protagonist of the team.
I also like defensively, you know, so that the flagrant two that ended up getting called on Brandon Miller, I think was generally because Maxi was frustrating him defensively. Like he was frustrated. I don't think he tried to hurt Maxi, but he couldn't get away from him, and sticking his arm up the way that he did and hitting him in the face, I thought was a nice moment. I thought that Maxi frustrated him into hitting him in the face.
Yeah, I would have called that a flagrant one. I think everybody's a little too quick to go up to the two. I think the flagrant ones should usually just be regular fouls, and the flagrant two should be flagrant ones, but whatever.
I don't care.
He just slides his feet now. He just slides his feet really, really well, and he's quick, and he has quick hands, and he uses it well, and he's getting stronger, and his base is getting more sturdy. He was such a good player at Kentucky, but not for the reasons he's a good player now.
Right.
Is more just like athleticism and anticipation, and he missed a lot of shots at Kentucky. It was a weird spacing team. His threes weren't going down, but like the thing you could count on was like he's going to be a bulldog on the defensive end. And then he came in here and he was such a good offensive player almost right away that sort of took some time, as it does for a lot of young players, especially guards, to come back around. But I was never concerned that he wasn't going to defend. I was just never concerned, and because it's like it's I think it's in his mindset. and he has the skills and the physicality to do it. So it's been cool over the last couple of months seeing him take that more seriously, which will benefit them when Joel does get back and they're not playing any weaknesses on the defensive end. Nobody will be a bad defender once Joel gets back.
Yeah, and look, the other thing, there are going to be limitations to what he can do defensively because of his size.
Of
and,
course.
You know, like Chris Paul as generally recognized as a really, really good defender, but short enough to where sometimes it just doesn't matter. But having Maxey not be a pick-on guy, I think, is the real win there, that other teams aren't just going to say, give me Maxey, you know, is the advantage when we look into the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And he might still... Some teams are just so mismatch hunty that, like, if it's Boston, Tatum could just say, like, that's my best option.
Sure.
I can just shoot over
him. Yeah.
But I think he'll put up a fight, which is all you can ask for a guy that size.
Yeah.
It was interesting that they gave Tobias the night off. I do agree with it. It's a classic Sixers tale. Somebody gets hurt in a game and then they come back in that game and play and then miss the next 1 to 5 games after that.
Yeah, I mean, this one, an ankle, the tie the shoe tighter, play through the game, sprained ankle is a regular basketball thing, I think. Not so mm-hmm. much a tore something in his knee, come back anyway, little less. This one a little less worrisome than the other one is. Also, this one happening to Tobias Harris, a little less worrisome than it happened to Joel Embiid. No offense, good guy, reads books, blah, 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 blah. But we'll talk about that in a second. The Rights Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Mortgage CS. Here's a review from Google reviews. Like, all of their reviews are 5 stars. This comes from Hassan. There's a good reason that Mortgage CS gets all 5-star ratings from their clients. Ben and his team are the most professional, courteous, knowledgeable, and organized, helpful, fair, and well-connected team that you will ever come across. Couldn't be happier with how they managed to get our complicated deal closed despite a very tight timeline. Highly recommend. Here's the things you need to know. Mortgage CS is independent. MortgageCS.com/Ricky. Go there to schedule consultation. You go to MortgageCS.com/Ricky. First of all, they're independent, meaning that the loan that they get you is going to be the best loan that you can get, not something that they're getting a kickback from the bank. That's the first thing. Second thing is that the housing market right now is super competitive. Very competitive. So having a mortgage company that is going to be available to you all the time to get you same day pre-approvals, who's going to be up early. Ben is up at 6 a.m., you know, up early, available to you on weekends, available to you in evenings, super, super, super important. And a company that's not going to overextend itself and take literally every customer they can and not be available to you. That's happened to me before I knew about Mortgage CS when I was getting a mortgage. Couldn't get a hold of somebody. That will never happen with Mortgage CS. So many Ricky listeners have been happy. You will be happy too. 267-391-7425 is Ben's cell phone. He is the CEO of Mortgage CS. You could text him right now. 267-391-7425. That is Ben. Or go to MortgageCS.com/Ricky. Or you can read all those reviews if you don't believe me. We believe in Mortgage CS. You should believe in Mortgage CS too. This advertisement is not a commitment to lend or extend credit. Mortgage CS is an equal housing opportunity mortgage broker. All loans are subject to credit approval. Certain restrictions may apply. Company NMLS 1464766. Visit MortgageCS.com/Ricky for more information. Before we get to the Tobias thing, I wanted to talk about that. We got a call about the Maxey foul calls, and you've mentioned it before too. I sort of like, can we talk about this now, or do you want to wait till after Tobias? Okay, here's the call. We got 833 Lickface.
This is Jack from New Jersey. I'm calling about the Tyrese Maxey foul call complaining. I saw Spike's tweet about, well, Tyrese Maxey's in the middle of the pack in terms of...
First of all, if you're quoting my tweet, you don't need to do it in dumb guy voice. Just moving forward.
The top
I disagree, actually.
And getting free throw attempts called and getting fouls called on him. And that there really shouldn't be that much complaining about it. And to that, I just disagree that this list tells you anything in regards to Tyrese Maxey getting enough foul calls. The people you have below him are Colin Sexton, a player who does not get the respect of any of the other player on that list. In terms of fouls called on him, you have Steph Curry, someone whose game does not rely or does not even precipitate getting fouled a lot because he's a historic perimeter shooter and an incredible off-ball offensive player who can get open in the paint at a whim. And then you have Tyrese Halliburton, who is a point guard who runs to the rim in order to create gravity around him so that he can pass the ball out. He can kick it out. That's the same reason why Jokic doesn't have any more than 5.5 free throw attempts per game, even though he could probably have 10 or whatever number equivalent to Embiid. Maybe not entirely equivalent to Embiid, but way more than 5.5.
Okay. So here is the list he talks about. This is free throw attempts per game. Anthony Edwards, 6.5. Jalen Brunson, 6.3. De'Aaron Fox, 6.1. Donovan Mitchell, 6.0. Maxey, 5.5. Sexton, 4.9. Curry, 4.7, Halliburton, 3.4. And I guess my point was, obviously SGA way ahead of either of them, but like makes sense. Trey and Lillard also ahead of them. If you look at drives per game, this list almost exactly mimics how many drives per, like the fact that Jalen Brunson is averaging 0.8 free throw attempts more than Tyrese Maxey, like, makes sense to me. He drives more than Tyrese Maxey does. You know, Anthony Edwards drives more than Tyrese Maxey does. De'Aaron Fox drives more than Tyrese Maxey does. And the guys that Maxey is ahead of, Halliburton, actually slightly less than Maxey, but Curry and Sexton all drive less than he does. So I guess I understand because we're watching the games all the time, but I also think that the curse of being a great finisher, the way that Maxey is, sort of like, is that it seems like he's trying to finish the play, not get fouled. And a lot of guards that are in the upper echelon of free throw attempts, SGAs, Trey's, Lillard, are trying to get fouled. And I think a lot of times Maxey is just trying to finish the play. So I actually don't think he gets an unfair whistle. I think he doesn't really grift on the perimeter for fouls, which is how a lot of guards get them. I'm curious as to what you think, because when I'm watching, there are fouls here and there, but I don't think he gets an unfair whistle.
It sort of feels like a couple of things. It seems like once in a while he can't buy a whistle, which I guess sure. happens to everybody. It's less than like consistently he never gets a whistle, and more like there's occasional games when they're like not giving him anything and it feels like he's getting thrown around out there.
Yep.
And I think not all drives are created equal.
Sure.
Like I think Maxey drives more than most guys are going all the way to the rim or keeping the momentum at the rim. Like Brunson is an example of somebody who's driving and then pulling up a lot. Whereas Maxey, even when he doesn't do much pull up, even the floater is him taking his momentum there, and guys still, he doesn't get the like, landing space type things, which is a tough, it is a tough thing to call on floaters because he is jumping so far forward.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't disagree with your tweet. Okay. I'd probably still read it in dumb guy voice, but I think that
I
think that it is a fair thing to say. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you know, he's small and he'll, as he gets older, he'll get more foul calls too, you know, as he's in the league longer, as he figures that out. And truth be told, the way that they've been calling the game over the last month and a half,
yeah,
the foul grifter guys don't seem to be benefiting quite as much as they were before.
Yeah. I wouldn't want him to start doing that. I hate the way some of those guys do it.
It's not fun to watch. You know?
It's not fun to watch. And especially like, I don't know, you see so many guys get like any big is getting bashed over the head with a steel chair so often, and it's just when someone trying to penetrate and has space around them can just sort of like hook an arm and bounce off them and act like they are, you know, took an elbow from it, is when they make that call so easily, and there's so much less contact there than there would be on even a regular post up. I like the way that, as we said last podcast, I like the way that it's been called lately. I think refs becoming less gullible is good. I think incentivizing defenders to try to protect the rim and make plays at the rim, not just slide in there at the last minute and draw a charge, is better for the game. Certainly better for Tobias. He's not doing that.
Leading Tobias in all-time charges drawn.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
it's an easy record. It's an easy record to break. Which the, you know, everybody always says like, man, I could get that stat line, like as a regular person coming in the NBA. And it's like, usually no, you couldn't. But I do think I could take a charge.
Yes.
I have and can better than Tobias. I do think that is one ability that most amateur basketball players, they might not get up after.
Yeah.
These are big guys.
Yeah.
But at least they at least could plant there and hold on.
You mentioned the way the game's being called lately. We got a few voicemails about it. You have to, if you haven't listened, if you're listening to this, listen to the Zach Lowe pod with Joe Dumars and Monty McCutcheon.
I haven't listened to it yet.
Dude, it is so good. So basically, Zach Lowe has him on, and he's like, all right, since February X, scoring is down like precipitously. Free throws are down significantly. Tom Haberstroh, you know. And Joe Dumars like, never happened. and then Monty McCutcheon is like, yeah, we never really decided on any of this. Never happened. We're always just working on things. And Zach's like, okay, but we understand you didn't have a big meeting and decide it, but it just did maybe over the course of time you guys decide this. And Monty McCutcheon's like, no, you got to understand, we never had that meeting at all. And Joe Dumars is like, yeah, just the other day, me and Monty McCutcheon were in my office. You know, I was the offensive player. He's the defensive player. We're trying to figure things out. But no, we never gave any specific instructions. And they're just lying, like in the most egregious way that you have to respect it. I think you should listen to it. The lying is incredible.
That is fun. I do love when refs blatantly lie and act like it doesn't. It's very
not even happening.
Yeah, it's very. They're look. I hate refs. I hate ref legislators. Hate them all.
Scores were 135-129 2 months ago, and now they're 79-76. But nothing changed.
Maybe it's COVID. Yeah. Thanks, Monty.
So you mentioned Tobias not being in the lineup. He sprained his ankle in the last game. He was questionable. Announced it. There, and Mike O'Connor mentioned this. Maybe we're just dreaming. It did seem like the ball was moving a bit better without Tobias. And speaking of Zach Lowe, Zach mentioned in his 10 Things column that Tobias looks like he doesn't even want to be there. And there are occasional times where he's like wide open and runs away from the spot so he doesn't have to engage. I had mentioned a couple of times in passing that I think the Sixers would not be any worse without Tobias. I certainly right now, it doesn't seem to make a difference the way he's playing.
Oh yeah. The way he's playing, obviously, but they are going to need to survive a little bit more. They need him to be at least slightly below average Tobias. He doesn't have to be all-star campaign Tobias for them to find it useful. They're just so shorthanded. And if they're so easily getting the ball to Maxie's hands, Kyle Lowry's overtaxed. Nick Batum played 37 minutes last night. Played very well, by the way. Finally hit a couple threes. Hit one. Stand still. Nick Batum, man, he only feels comfortable on the move. He's got to find some sort of rhythm off the catch, whether that's like him hopping into a three or fading off of it or something. He is really, if he is standing still, he is so not confident. It's very bizarre for that kind of guy. But I will give an assist. Nick Nurse gets an assist on the Batum dagger to push it to 10 last night. B-ball comes up to set a screen. He's like, no. Nick is like yelling at him from the sideline. Fuck off. Get out of there. Because he's going to double Maxie, get the ball out of his hands. So then Maxie gets that pass to Lowry, swings to Batum for the corner three that B-ball set a screen for. So that was cool.
Do you think the offensive flow is better without Tobias?
I think the Hornets are a bad team. And if you're going to double Maxi, then you're already going to have an advantage. And having guys that are a little more quick decision in Batum and Lowry and campaign, even Buddy Hield at least moves off ball. KJ's not hanging with the ball in his hands. The only guy that sits with the ball too much is really Kelly Oubre.
Yeah.
I think that's just you take out a guy who contemplates with the ball in his hands a little bit more, then it'll feel faster. But I do think Hornets gave up the advantage a lot because of how much they doubled Maxi, and they had quicker passers and decision makers out there. So I wasn't surprised by it, but I also don't think like this Embiidless team is just one missing Tobias
away from being
sprained ankle away from being perfect. Yeah, I don't think that's gonna happen.
By the way, you mentioned I talked earlier about Maxi being doubled. I think this is one way in specific that they are incredibly that the amount of missing they are doing of D'Anthony Melton is so noticeable when they're doing that. Because, and by the way, it's one of the reasons why playing Maxi with Lowry is helpful, just to have somebody else in the backcourt who is willing to shoot and at least capable. Obviously, you know, obviously Lowry is a much more capable ball handler than Melton is, but somebody who is just willing to shoot, willing to move the ball off of getting that once Maxi gets doubled, it's so helpful having those guys out there.
And yeah,
they miss Melton a lot.
Lowry's been great. He's still a little hesitant for me on, like, off the catch. He's pretty willing, but as far as like what can you do on the drives now? And Melton, even though it was always an adventure around the rim with him, especially earlier this season, he can still like pull up for a jumper. He has a quick trigger. He can elevate. It's the Lowry experience is just like, you really would love to have more shooters around him at all times so that his, you know, he's 37, 38. Like he's just not there anymore. But I love how often out of sets, Nick Nurse draws up plays to have Lowry pass to Maxi off the catch. It's a really nice, it feels like he's purposefully doing that in like after a timeout or something, but it doesn't happen too much in the flow of an offense. Maybe it's because Lowry is not getting that much of an advantage off the dribble anymore, but in a set that Nick can draw up in a timeout, it feels like it happens nicely. And I like that. And a big deflection late for Lowry.
Yeah.
I love how often his head is on a swivel, looking like me watching four college basketball games at once, which I definitely respect and will be doing as the week goes on.
The Rice Ricky Sanchez podcast brought to you by Briggs Auction. Download the app in the App Store or Google Play, BriggsAuction.com. I went to Briggs Auction finally yesterday to the warehouse for open pickup to pick up a bunch of sneakers I got in the sneaker auction, which were sick. In person there. There's the New Balances if you're watching. There's also some Sauconys, check those out, some Diadoras. It's awesome. An old WBCN t-shirt. But I saw three Ricky people there who are picking up stuff. One guy who's going on Fly the Process from Baltimore, one from Harrisburg picking up stuff. It was great. CJ, what is your Briggs auction item of the week?
Yeah, so I'm looking through a lot of great stuff this week. And
look at the smile on CJ's face when he talks about Briggs.
Look at the smile Briggs. On my face when CJ talks about Briggs.
It's exciting stuff. So for this week, I'm looking around, and as a little backstory, when I moved into my first apartment, I kind of did the IKEA special of just like getting everything that I wasn't thinking about for like the cheapest price possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm at a point where like a lot of that stuff kind of screams, okay, this is from IKEA. Like you see it everywhere. So I'm working on replacing things one by one.
Grown up furniture.
Yeah. And I really like these teak nightstands. I think I'm like falling into this mid-century modern landscape of furniture, but I think this would be...
These look early 80s to me.
Do they?
Yeah.
I think they would be a nice project to stain, to clean up, to make it look nice.
Yeah, love a project.
And then I saw this. Of course, I got to throw it in.
Herman Miller chair.
It's the best chair in the world.
Yes.
If you don't have a Herman Miller Aeron, pick one up. One up from Briggs Auction. There's
got my
two
wife
of them actually on there too.
So. Got my wife one for her office. Don't have one for here because it's a high up chair, so I can get one of the Herman Miller high up ones. But that's a regular one. So yeah. Briggs Auction. All kinds of stuff, collectibles. When I was in the warehouse, which was sick, by the way, there was some painting that's going to go for like hundreds of thousands of dollars. He showed me, they have like an entire, I think it's in the next auction that's happening, entire Playboy kit like collection from the beginning. I saw issue number one with Marilyn Monroe on it, which was pretty cool. Just go to the app, download it, App Store, Google Play, go to BriggsAuction.com, check in every week. If you're downsizing, if you have stuff to sell off, info@BriggsAuction.com. Briggs Auction, the official auction of the process. So Mo Bamba, still starting.
Yeah.
Playing more minutes than B-ball.
That upset me. I don't mind the starting.
Looking as bad as he could look, Mo. I am going to support it because I do think that Nick has figured out the thing that Doc figured out is the only way that you can get B-Ball Paul to do what you want him to do is to have him scared that his playing time's going to go away. And I think this is like part of it. I feel like he's slowly inching Paul up and keeping him in the backup role to keep him sort of focused. And we've seen the best Paul that we've seen in a while with him backing up Mo Bamba. So
look, absolutely. Bring him off the bench. Great. Mo Bamba can't be playing 28 minutes. You can't be. Find another way to prove a point to B-Ball than playing Mo Bamba 28 minutes and making you cutting off your nose to spite your face. I'd be very happy with going small for 5 minutes at a time here and there.
They do that, seems like, once in a while now.
They didn't do it last night at all.
They did not last night, yeah.
It's getting the playing Bamba, and there was a mic'd up segment with Nick Nurse where one of the things he was saying was, Mo's good. And I'm like, it's becoming a little bit like, it's Doc-ish. We're veering towards Doc territory. Mo had one of the worst passes you've ever seen directly to a Hornets player to trigger a break. Maybe he's also ashamed of his hands. I don't know. He's just not doing anything. I would love to see think about Brook Lopez in drop pick and roll, right? Like he's dropping, he's using his length, whatever. Sometimes he like throws a hand out confuse an offensive player, at least do something. It just seems like Mo Bamba really rolls out the red carpet for any pick and roll situation. No stunt at him. Do a Luke Kornet like confusing jump at the wrong time. Just do something, not just backing up so far that you're in the stanchion and then you have nothing to do. It's really pretty bad. And I thought B-Ball played well. He had 5 offensive rebounds, yep, in 20 minutes. The iconic moment of this game, and there's always something weird. 2 iconic players mentioned here in Alexei Pokuševski leaving Buddy Hield to rotate onto B-Ball Paul
is a great moment.
Is a tremendous moment. B-Ball makes the right pass back to Buddy Hield.
Yep.
To one of the best shooters ever. Thank you, Poku, for doing that. It helps to show that you're a threat. It helps to show that you can and will take that shot. Although later in the game, he did miss a 3 off an inbound, get a long rebound to himself and take another one. The crowd noise, I would love to study the crowd noise after B-Ball does something. It is it's more than just cheer and groan. There's levels to it. Like it is a living, breathing organism.
There's confusion in there. Yeah. Yeah.
There's like, I'm a little bit proud, but a little bit like, oh man, I wish it went in. Like there's so much depth to how the crowd reacts to B-Ball.
I've learned to not expect it, but it is disappointing. He never wants to dunk on anybody. You know, like there's so many of those cool B-Ball layups that would be sick dunks and fouls drawn if he felt like doing it.
But he just likes to go up and under. He likes to go like
dipsy doos.
He likes a dipsy doo.
Yeah,
but a nice game from B-Ball plus 10 in 20 minutes. And there's no reason to play Bamba 28. There just isn't.
So Kai Jones made his blue coats debut, scored 15 points, I think 8 rebounds, 5 steals, or something like that. They said yesterday that he's going to spend the entire 10-day contract with the Blue Coats, which I think is a fair thing to do, given has been, you know, iffy whether he can be a contributor. But then they said they will reassess, and then it's potential. Man, he is bigger than, he's enormous.
Yeah.
You know, like he's incredibly
big and strong and fluid,
long. But so many guys that are long like that at that age are skinny. He's slender, but he is a strong guy, man.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, boy, if he can play.
Yeah. Boy. I mean, it's a project, but I'm definitely interested in seeing it. You know, Ricky Council's fallen out of the rotation. They still haven't given him a contract for the next year. So we'll see what they decide to do with that last roster spot, if they want to add to it or something. I would just, whether it's give Kai Jones a chance after this 10 days or go small and throw like a Batum, KJ, Ricky Council lineup out there when B-Ball's not playing. You can't play Mo Bamba in minutes that matter. there's just not an advantage you're getting in any respect. Like once in a while he'll get a hand on a shot block
or
I'll
hit
rim.
A three or something.
Once in a while I'll hit a three, but like he's just standing there on both ends and he's just too slow to do anything.
Good guy.
Positive. Great
good
guy.
Great.
Lovely
good
man.
Guy. Such a good guy.
Would be so helpful on the bench being a good guy.
Yeah.
A really nice Kelly Oubre game.
Yeah, I would say so as well. Hit a three, hit a which seems like a rare occasion at this moment, but hit a three.
Shoot three.
Yeah.
He just has a really good sense of cutting into helpful open space. And now that the Sixers have three guards that can make those passes, he feels like Lowry and campaign really, really weaponize his cutting ability. There was one time when he cut down the lane, Lowry hit him in stride. He elevated really quick for a dunk over Nick Richards. Similar play happened a few minutes later where Lowry does a little hit ahead with Kelly, has a lane open in front of him, makes the pass in rhythm. Kelly rises up again to dunk on Richards. And there was one play where he cuts away from the ball to the other low block and campaign found himself along the baseline under the basket and made a pass along the baseline to Kelly for a nice play underneath. He just seems to have a knack for it of cutting while becoming available. And I think it's just really nice. And again, would be really helpful when Embiid gets back. But went invisible in the second half, that happens. And then had a bunch of big 4 points later to close out the game. And then did you see him conducting Here Come the Sixers at the end of the game? I love any new guy, you know, within the first year or whatever, realizing how much they like the song when the song plays at home and they're very excited about it. And they like the crowd getting into it and stuff. It's very fun. So a nice game from Kelly Oubre, 22 points on 16 shots. Just doing his thing, man. Getting to the fucking rim.
What was he going to say about Oubre? Oh, I just noticed it was after he finished a dunk and he was on the bench afterwards after there was a timeout and they showed him. Man, he's the best looking Sixer of all time.
Handsome man.
One of the best looking guys I've ever seen. Like so much so, it reminded me, do you remember like that handsome mugshot guy from like 10 years ago or something that you like looked at his face and you're like, fuck man, it seems like AI made that face. Look, he is so good looking. I can't get over how handsome the guy is.
Good looking guy?
He's incredibly handsome.
Good looking guy, good looking, good look. Not a good looking dribble.
No.
But good looking dunks.
Yeah,
even when they miss, they're good looking dunks. Buddy Hield, I thought had a pretty nice game.
At least he didn't do too much non-Buddy Hield stuff.
Yeah, there was one play when he had Poku on him, and it really illustrated how little burst he has off the dribble. And Poku's just kind of staying with him in a really alarming way, and he had to pass it up. He like tries to go left, and it's like, no, it's not happening. He just doesn't have the burst to get by anybody unless they are lunging at him to protect against a three. And he's not pulling from deep enough where that happens that often. But sometimes it does. And he did hit a couple shots and then they started lunging him and he got to the rim a little bit more, which is nice. But those finishes, contested finishes that he was hitting earlier in the season or earlier in his Sixers tenure have sort of left him. And so it really is, what's it going to look like when Embiid gets there? Like, that's the only thing that matters. I think his minutes have gone down because I think defensively he falls asleep off ball too much. But like 20 minutes a night is perfectly fine for what it'll end up being when everybody's healthy. But I found myself a little surprised that Nurse is not playing him more.
So before we get to Eliza, I wanted to, CJ, could you bring up the video of B-Ball Paul playing chess? Because I wanted to talk about both Melton. And so B-Ball Paul, I'm looking for the actual original tweet. There we go. So D'Anthony Melton has an event that he did last year as well that was called, hold on, his annual chess event, which is called, hold on, I have it in the rundown, don't I? The Make Your Move chess event. So it happened at the Sixers facility with the Camden Academy Charter School and the Knight School. B-Ball Paul was playing against a kid in chess, Daryl Morey, D'Anthony Melton. Now here is B-Ball Paul. You have to watch this beating a kid in chess and did not want to lose.
Good game.
Fall well.
That was a crazy fall well.
So apparently B-Ball Paul has been playing chess since like fifth grade or something. Plays Daryl Morey a lot, has not beaten Daryl Morey. Now, Tommy emailed us in, and I think I knew about this before.
Daryl, maybe a little less chess, a little more scouting.
Yeah, so on chess.com...
A little more scouting the draft, my friend.
On chess.com, you can play against like sort of artificial intelligence versions of famous people, and you can play against Daryl. But sort of like in 2K, they have quotes in them. So Tommy was playing the chess version of Daryl. Here are some quotes from Chess Daryl. "Better be warned. I have armies to spare. Good luck. Remember, opportunity is not a lengthy visitor. If there's someone who knows about trades, it's me." Okay. Do you think Daryl supplied these quotes, or are they? Did they come up with them themselves?
I think they made it up.
Okay.
And it's really, it is hard. I don't play really many video games at all, but it's heartfelt to know that video game, like AI, NPC technology has not improved as far as quotes go in my lifetime.
Right. So the quote, and this is from Gina Menzel, who covers the Sixers for the Inquirer, is not like a great quote about Melton. He said the back quote finally gave out. He said he is frustrated, but recovery is progressing positively. Quote, "It is what it is. Keep going day by day. Wake up, figure it out."
Damn.
Worried that we're not going to see him again this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
So rights to Ricky, we will get to Eliza Hardy Jones of the rights to Ricky Sanchez in a second. Before we do, we'll talk about our sponsor, LL Pavorsky Jewelers. I was at a birthday party, a 30th birthday party for one Jack Fritz yesterday, who did get his ring from LL. But one of his buddies who's getting married at the end of April also got their engagement rings from LL. Over 380 rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners have purchased engagement rings from LL Pavorsky Jewelers. LL, who will be on Fly the Process, who has been on every road trip, I believe, in Los Angeles, in case you have jewelry needs while you're on the trip. Maybe you meet somebody on the trip. Maybe you're with somebody on the trip. I don't know if he's going to bring the jewelry with him. But in any case, if you're going to buy an engagement ring, you can't go to anybody else. You know it's the rule. LL is the rule. The reason it's the rule is not just because we said so, is because he's going to treat you better than anybody else does. He's not going to pressure you into buying anything you don't want to buy. He's going to have the best product. He's going to give you the best price. But that top thing, the thing that I mentioned, the customer service, the attention, the lack of pressure, the care that he puts into every one of our listeners that goes to him is sort of the model for everybody else. If all of our other partners act like LL, which they do, then they're good. Also, the first advertiser on the rights to Ricky Sanchez. If you want an engagement ring, make an appointment with him. The store's been there for over 30 years, but make the appointment so he can give you the care that you deserve. 215-627-2252. Email Lee at llpavorsky.com or tweet at him at llpavorsky. He supports our charities, Providence Animal Center and Mama T's Community Fridge. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Bringing a jacket full of engagement rings to Fly the Process.
We welcome the rights to Ricky Sanchez's own Eliza Hardy Jones.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Also of the War on Drugs, also of her second full-length solo album, which comes out April 19th, called Pickpocket, which you can order on translucent lavender vinyl. Pre-order right now at record-stop.com. We'll put the link in the show notes. You've really grown since we launched you years ago.
I owe it all to you. I mean, where would I be without the rights to Ricky? I'm just not kidding. I have been in a lot of bands. I've been on a lot of tours. I feel like I've done a lot of work in my life. Still, everybody just knows me from the Ricky. I just had a baby, and then I was in the physical therapist's office, and I'm like doing the squats, working out, and the lady's like, "What are you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm a musician." And the guy in the office was like, "What's your name?" I was like, "I'm Eliza Hardy Jones." He's like, "Oh shit, I listened to the rights to Ricky Sanchez." I was like, "Oh my God."
I love a threatening, "What's your name?"
Yeah. Yeah. What's your name?
Your
musician. Yeah. What's your name? Do I know you? What's happening?
Well, we are proud to have that association. It was actually a recorded a Carl Andrew Record Club with Mootloo before this, and we were talking about the combination of sort of like excitement and annoyance that he and Amos run into given their connection to the pod. It's like, yes, I'll say something like Sixers Z for you to make you stop it. You know. So by the way, congrats on the album itself. So it doesn't come out to April 19th. We were allowed to listen to it early. The single is out now. This is the year, but the album is so good.
It's great.
And is such a, and this is not to, because Become is a good record, but this one, and it's almost 10 years later, right? But yeah. This one feels like such an enormous leap from a production standpoint and from like a sonic standpoint. The songwriting is great, but just it feels so big is the thing that I thought struck me when I was listening to it. And I've just the last thing, I'm always incredibly nervous when one of our musician friends has a new album and they send it, because I'm like, oh, I hope it's good, you know, because I want to plug it, but this is just outstanding. What an accomplishment. It's so good.
Thank you so much. I think its bigness is due to, and because Become, I like went into the studio with some guys and we just like recorded in a moment and that's what it was. And it was like loose and free and we had a great time. With this, it was like me in my room upstairs, just like tinkering forever. I think there was just a lot of time for me to be like, what if I just got even bigger? What if I just did more stuff here? What if I made a stack of 50 vocals instead of 2 vocals? You know, I kind of went all the way. I had a lot to think about and I just wanted to be in that room thinking about it.
It is truly excellent. I also think it's interesting. You largely produce this yourself, or so?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Nick Krill, who's sort of my forever production companion, was sort of my sounding board. So I would like work on something, send him like a rough mix of it and be like, have I lost my mind? You know, like give me some direction here. And he'd be like, oh, you know, like you should add some guitars here. And then he did all of the mixing at the end. And he's such an incredible expert mix engineer and like honestly fixed all of my mistakes and made everything sound amazing. So he's definitely in there, but I feel like I produced it, you know, well, largely when myself.
I always think the sort of the potential problem with producing yourself is you made it. So everything, you understand why you would do everything. And you think largely, well, this is good because of this. So having that bar to say, I don't need to add another extra thing to this, or it seems like such a challenge to do it when you're producing it yourself, you know?
Yeah. And I think when I was younger and I made records, because I was not a great engineer, I would just keep adding stuff until it sounded good. And I feel like now knowing, you know, having worked with Nick probably for 15 years, like I kind of know what I need to do so that when I give it to him, he can just like put whatever magic mix engineer EQ sauce on it. And it'll sound amazing. So like, I think there is like, I'm better at editing myself where I'm like, I don't need 6 guitars playing the same line. I just play the guitar line and then he'll, you know, spice it up and it'll sound awesome.
So you recently became a mother.
Yes.
You told me backstage at Live Ricky that you were pregnant.
I did. Yeah.
What number person was I to find out? I
would like. Oh, like super. I'm not kidding. Like maybe the 10th person. Amazing. We weren't telling anyone.
I felt it. Wow. I could feel that at the time.
Yeah. I think like, I'm not sure that Charlie knew. I think I had just told Charlie, like, it was such a secret, but I was so, at that point, I was like in the point of that first trimester pregnancy where I was like so desperately tired that I felt like I needed to start telling people. Cause I was like, I'm not being weird. I'm just pregnant. I'm so tired.
How did becoming a mom influence this record?
Well, this record is at its core about the process of becoming a mom. And I had a really difficult time. I essentially was like, couldn't do it on my own. Mm-hmm. And so we did a lot of fertility treatments and they did not work. And it was like really pretty, like a lot, like years long brutalizing process. And so I think this record was sort of like my way of dealing with all of that. I've just kind of like coming to terms with the fact that it wasn't going to work for us, that I wasn't going to be able to have children of my own, you know, that it was, which was really hard and dark. And I feel like this record was about just kind of like coming to terms with that. And then when I finished, we had friends reach out to us and say, hey, we have an embryo. We'd like to give it to you. So I am a mom because of the generosity of friendship and science, which is so exciting. Yeah. Yeah. But it's also like being able to release a record that in so many ways is like, you know, a record about grief and pain, but being able to release it into like the context of like, but it all worked out. Everything's okay. I mean, it would have been okay either way, honestly. Like it would have been fine, but it's a little bit better that I get to be a mom. I love being a mom.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. You, and there are times on the album where like Ballad for the Baron is an obvious like nod to that and tells that story. But I thought it was interesting that like in the notes and in the like press release, you talk about it being an album, like a grief centric album, but so I compare it to, I think of other grief centric albums and the Hospice by the Antlers like pops up in my head, but it does not always feel like hopeless, I guess, which is, it is a brightly produced album and it is not a miserable album. It does seem like a almost like being an active participant in dealing with it. Like that is the vibe rather than the, boy, this was awful vibe, which I think art can come from both places, but it seems like it came from the former on this.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, like, again, like it was my way of kind of writing myself out of it. So I didn't, you know, I was kind of like a lot of the lyrics, I was like, I'm gonna have to rewrite these lyrics. These are too intense, but I didn't rewrite them. I just left them on there because people can just handle intense lyrics. But I feel like musically it was about like finding my way to like joy and purpose and all that stuff. So, you know, like this first single is lyrically pretty dark, but like musically it's pretty jaunty. It's got like a real bop to it. You want to dance a little bit, but I think like that's what was helpful to me. Like I didn't want to live in it. I wanted a way out of it. And I think that the music was about finding that way out of it.
Yeah. I'm pretty gullible and easily convinced as a listener to music. I would say I'm not like discerning in a way. So when I was listening to it, Spike told me like, okay, it's sad. It's really sad. And I was listening to it. I was like, no, it's not. It's great. But then you hear it a couple of times and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, I hear it. I see it. I feel it. But it didn't feel like you're just, you're living in so much, thick emotion. It does feel like you're, and maybe that the fact that you like came out of it on the other end in a positive way allowed that, or you can feel that over the course of the record. Like this was a time, this is something I felt and this was real, but I'm also like on the other side of it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So one of the things I'm particularly interested in is you're in the War on Drugs now fully, and you all tour a lot and I imagine have a lot of touring coming up.
Yeah.
But then you go and you make something that is specifically yours instead of ours. And so is there a, maybe you haven't had to deal with it yet, but is there sort of this desire to take this music that you've done and say, I want to expose, like, I want to go and do my thing for a while and not our thing. And I think that's probably it seems like everybody in War on Drugs who wants a side project can have one. And there are a lot of side projects on there. But I do wonder if there's that pull to you emotionally about like you just spent all this time and all this effort on this. And then to go back to that, is that sort of something that you think about ever?
No, which
That's a great
is
answer.
So awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. I think it's, you know, maybe a piece of like, you know, I'm in my 40s. I have been making music for my whole life. And I think when I was younger, I did have that pull of like wanting to make it as myself, right? Like wanting to like, I'm going to make this record. I'm going to put it out. I'm going to get management. I'm going to get a booking agent. I'm going to like go on the tour. I'm going to like find people who are excited about what I'm doing in my voice. And like, that's going to be the most fulfilling thing. And I feel like as I got older, I realized that the thing that I love most about making my own music is that I get to make it. And that I don't love booking shows and like worrying about the business of music, which is so much a part of it. And being a member of the War on Drugs, I have the like incredible luxury of, I don't do any of that. I literally just like, I get to play these incredible songs. I get to like play these incredible shows. I get to hang out with my friends who I love so much. Like, I don't know what the ticket drops are. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes in terms of like how we're booking these tours. I don't know. I know nothing. I know nothing about the business side of it. And it is so freeing.
Business is stupid. It's
so hard. Like, I just love it. So I feel like now with this solo album, I think probably for the first time, I put out this record with like the goal of, I want people to listen to it and I want it to like resonate with people. But that's kind of it. I just wanted to make the record and I'm so happy I did. And I'm so excited to go back out on tour with the War on Drugs.
Do you feel like, cause it's a somewhat of a similar thing as you were talking about it, I was relating it to myself. Like I'm on other people's shows. I'm writing on other people's shows, but I also write my own shit.
Yeah.
And it's similar to your situation in the way that like, do you sometimes have like a line or an idea or a thought that you like sort of are unsure whether this should be for yours or for the band?
Yeah. I mean, not in the War on Drugs. I mean, mostly because like, that's not my role in the War on Drugs. No one's like coming to me like, you got some lyrics for us, Jonesy? You know, it's like, those can be my own. I feel like in other projects, you know, I've done more intense co-writing. Mm-hmm. And there is kind of a sense of like, you know, like a little piece of you that's like, oh, am I saving this? I made a record with Martha Graham Cracker, who's an amazing Philadelphia drag queen. And the process was just that four of us went into a room together with just ideas, any kind of ideas. And I know there was like, you know, we'd show up with like fragments of songs or pieces of songs, or we would just start from scratch. And I think there are definitely moments where you're like, all right, I've got this like beginning of a chorus. And I think it's pretty great. Like, do I give this to this group or do I keep it on my own? But I think, you know, you always just like go with the energy of it and you don't think about it too much. And you just try to make fun stuff. But I do hear you with the War on Drugs. That's not my role in the band. So.
It's funny. I was also relating it back to my own life. And I was thinking to myself, I'm going from in my future job at WIP, like there's this great joy that I'm anticipating. Not that I don't like managing, but like in only having to deal with my own shit rather than anybody else's shit is like now. And by the way, at this age when you're like, I can do that. Like I proved I can do that, but like, it would be nice to just have fun and hang out with my friends and do shows, you know.
I like can't tell you how great it is to be like the auxiliary player on the back line. It rules. It's the best.
So this album itself does have a lot of like sort of collaborators on it. You do have Charlie from War on Drugs, Anthony from War on Drugs, Daniel Hart, who, you know, I think is awesome.
Yeah.
Daniel Hart, who has done a lot of scores, but also has Dark Room. So but it noted that most of it was done not in the same room, you know, in that you sent everything around. What are the advantages? I think I know the obvious disadvantages to not being in the same room with somebody, but like, what is the advantage to collaborating that way?
I think the biggest advantage is just like who I got to collaborate with. So, you know, like on Become Dave Hartley from The War on Drugs. Oh, he always plays bass on my records. He's the
Dave,
best bass
I forgot
player.
To say Dave. I
He's
forgot
the best
to say
bass
Dave.
Player in the universe. Yep. He's incredible.
Yep.
But he doesn't live in Philly anymore. So like, I'm just going to make a record and he's not going to play bass on it. It's crazy. But I can just email him and he can send me bass tracks back. And then I get to still have that collaboration. And I think a lot of the folks I had played with before, but a lot of the folks, it was like, you know, I've never had Benny Yurko, who's this amazing producer, guitar player who I love so much. Like, I've never been able to play with him on a record, but I can if I just email him. So I think that is the major benefit, is just like, I don't just have to be limited to like who I can get in a room where I'm like coordinating everybody's schedules. This was just like, hey, I'm going to send you this thing, take a month, send it back to me whenever, you know. That was the big benefit.
The first song on your album is called This Is the Year.
Uh-huh.
I did ask her. You did. Like immediately.
Do you know something?
Yeah, I feel like this album is the ultimate process album. Okay. Let's be honest.
Yep.
We're talking about grief. We're talking about losing dreams. We're talking about falling short.
Yeah.
But, you know, if my experience can translate at all, I think this is the year.
I didn't want to, obviously what you were going through is so much more heartbreaking and serious than what the Sixers were, but I'm glad that you put it there.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
let me just say that, like, we are like a Philadelphia sports household.
Yes, of course.
And I cannot tell you like how much Philadelphia sports factors into our overall mental health and wellness. Like, I think, you know, when things are hard and you are like, you know, things suck right now, we're just sad, like my body's broken, it's like you're just like going through all this stuff and you're like, but we're gonna go to like the Sixers game and they're gonna win, it's gonna be great, and like they're gonna beat the Celtics in the second round and like that's gonna save us. And then when they don't save you, you feel like you take it personally.
You were supposed to I had all this other bad shit going on that I was sort of putting off to the side.
Yeah.
In hopes that you would fix it all.
Yeah, like the Eagles are going to win the Super Bowl and then everything is going to feel so much easier. Like this is going to be great. And then they don't win and you love them still, but like it hurt you. You took it personally.
Yeah. On the flip side, well, I do think that you were going to make the Sixers win this year thanks to your album, but I do blame you a little bit for the Eagles being bad. I think that is your fault. Yeah.
It is not my fault. Listen, first year we did the record, they made it all the way to the Super Bowl. Come on. The joy energy just carried them all the way through.
So where was that year too?
I don't know. I don't know what happened.
I do have to say that the War on Drugs as a collective are the top, from a name saying standpoint, the top collective. I did poke Amos one time. I was like, I think it was after the Eagles offensive line Christmas album, which you are a part of, obviously, there's a little Easter egg with the cartoon Amos with a say the name pin on it. And Adam says, writes Ricky Sanchez, it seems like excessively on stage.
Excessively. It's amazing.
And I remember when I saw one of the clips of Adam, I told Amos, I was like, you know, for one of our guys, you kind of fucking suck at saying the name. So War on Drugs has obviously, I love Amos, but like from a name saying perspective, I think your collective are far better at it than he is.
Yeah, so. It is. Adam's introductions of all of us are so, so funny. And yeah. I love how often he says the name. I love how often he introduces me as Philadelphia 76ers season ticket holder.
Holder, yeah.
Just like we'll be in, you know, like Portland, Oregon. People are just like, I guess we'll clap for her. I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't want to ask too many specific song questions because people can't hear it yet, but there's one that connected. There's actually two songs specifically that thought things about that I wanted to ask. One is the second song on the album is Long Winter Shadows. And it reminds me, so I'm a big Silverchair fan and their last album was called Young Modern. And it was clearly where Daniel Johns had said, I want to make an album like sort of inspired by the Beatles. And there are moments in this song that remind me of like that. And I think it is, once the song gets going, it takes a minute to like sort of build up. It feels so big, but it does feel like sort of late era Beatles to me in a way. And I was wondering if you've thought about that at all while making the song, or do you hear that at all?
Yeah. I mean, I think like the Beatles are incredible. If anybody wants to tell me that I made something that reminds them of the Beatles, I'm going to take that as a huge compliment.
Right.
I think that wasn't that wasn't the little like center inspiration piece that I was working from.
Cool.
I was listening to a lot of Efter Klang at the moment, like at the time I was writing that song. Efter Klang is this amazing Danish kind of like art pop band. Probably not super well known by everybody, but everybody should go listen to Efter Klang. They're amazing. And they do a lot. I think they just like kind of have these sort of swirling building things. And so I was just like, I want to make a swirling building thing. But that's the track that Daniel Hart plays on. And he like totally, I was so, you know, I wrote him, I was like, maybe you could like throw some strings on it. And it just like, he sent it back. And I was like, this is like Jeff Lynne masterpiece. Like, you know, I was so, so grateful that he was, you know, willing to give me a little bit of his time and talent.
And then the other one is, I just want to say like Fall to Pieces is probably like, there's just so much to it. And I know musicians hate when people do this, but I always try to connect something to something else that I like. Sure. And it feels big in the way that Pink Floyd feels big.
Whoa.
It's not like orchestral or anything. It's not the bigness, but just sort of like the thought that goes into it and the way that it sort of builds. And there's more and more as the song goes on. Reminds me of Floyd a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. I don't listen to Pink Floyd, so I have no idea if it sounds like Pink Floyd. Yeah.
Feels like Pink Floyd. But doesn't sound like Pink Floyd.
No, I'm into it. That song, I love the way that song turned out. I wrote that song as like a piano ballad, and it's like super, the piano part I wrote for it is very Broadway. It's very ambitious, and like there's kind of crazy chords, and like it's really intricate and kind of wild. And when I was recording it, I was just like, this is just stupid and corny. And then I just like erased the piano and replaced it with this. I like sampled my voice into a synthesizer and then just like did these wild sort of like loops with it. And then I kind of like took away the kind of like, I don't know, like I can play the piano vibe and like stuck it into this dreamier world. And I love that song now, but it definitely like almost got cut. When I was like deep into the piano version, I was like, this is stupid and I hate it. So I'm glad I fixed it.
You felt like you were doing like a recital of 2 hours.
Yes. Yeah. Like it felt so like, did you guys know that I studied classically? Like
show off.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have anything to say in a smart way, but I did like the album very much.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I enjoy your music and I enjoy your voice.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, so good luck with it. The album is available for pre-order now. We will put the link in the show notes. You can get the vinyl album now. Is there any plan to, I know War on Drugs has some dates coming up and you're playing The Man in,
September.
Is it September?
Yep.
With the National.
Yeah.
Are you going to come to the LA show? Yeah. Amazing. Awesome. Can't wait to see you there.
What a bill, by the way, the National. Yeah. And it seems like there's like this core of sort of indie-ish bands that are obsessed with Springsteen in that world, and the National fits it. Like, you know, it's a great bill. But are you planning on doing anything at all solo-wise for this, aside from the Reiki?
Not right now. I'm
okay. All right. Good.
If I get somewhere deep into the summer and I'm like, I just want to play these songs live, I'll book something. But between, you know, recording and doing a lot of touring, starting the summer with War on Drugs and hanging out with my dudes and, you know, watching the Sixers win the championship. There's not a lot of time for us. I don't know that this is the year, you guys.
I wrote it.
I am always like, as a Sixers fan, the like, these are my guys. They got it. Like, you don't know. They're going to pull it together. Like always. I'm believing this year. I'm kind of like, we'll just come back next year. We'll be stronger. It'll be okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Baby on tour?
Baby, not on tour. Baby to certain places, but not on the, like, Baby's not coming on the tour bus.
Okay. Yeah. That seems like a good.
Yeah. Yeah. Baby can fly in for fun events, but no Baby on the tour bus.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you guys so much.
Great record. Good luck with it. Appreciate you wearing the Reiki shirt.
Say the name.
The Heavy Slime Reiki shirt, one of the legendary ones. A shirt so popular, our listeners were mad at us for not making more of them. Got some threats on that shirt. So, congrats. We'll put the link to pre-order in the show notes. And congrats and thank you for stopping in.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Bye, guys.
See ya.
Thanks.
There she is, the Reiki Zone.
She's ours.
Eliza Hardy Jones, yes. Introduced her. You're welcome. You're welcome, Eliza. You're welcome for everything.
That's it.
So we have Fly the Process next weekend. We're looking forward to seeing everybody. We do have one more pod before then, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Selection Sunday in a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a ton of basketball. Gosh, I love it. I'm bursting. I am full of life and love for how much basketball I am watching and will be watching.
We're not going to send this note. We're not going to tell everyone because we don't know if the bar can handle it, but where Mike is watching the games on Saturday, if you are on Fly the Process, it will be in your itinerary as to where to watch the games. And we did decide to do the pod at an undisclosed outdoor park location at some point. So we will not be disclosed. We're not disclosing that, right?
I don't think so. I think also if I'm going to check it out, but if that's not an option, we could do Tony and Taylor's house, where they also offered to host us there, which is relatively close to the bar.
Tony's Ricky guy. Taylor's not
both,
Ricky.
Both Ricky.
Oh, I didn't know Taylor was too.
Come on.
Cool. Well, I mean, she was at the, what's it called? The G League, the Blue Coats.
Yeah, you don't come to the Blue Coats game unless you're all the way in.
Right. Well, we've certainly had plenty of people who have forced significant others into events. It wouldn't have been the first time ever. Sure. So sure. Great. All right. Well, we will, anything else, right? We hit everything. Order Eliza's album. Watch basketball. Good luck, Mike, with Selection Sunday.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good luck. Hope you get in.
Well, hey, Temple. Temple's been making a run. Four games in four days. Get to the championship game. Knock some other guys off the bubble.
Who do they play in the championship game today?
They play UAB.
Are they any good?
They're okay. They're pretty good. I mean, but one of them will be a bid stealer.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Temple tough, man. Cherry and the White. Just like making a run. They have every Temple team of my lifetime. My dad went to Temple. Always rooted for Temple. Like they never have touch around the rim. It's so many. They've been smoking layup. It's every game is a rock fight. But they've been finding a way to win. My dad expects them to break his heart, but this is quite a run. It's quite a fun run to the finals in the AAC.
It is nice in that because it seems like it's been so long since Temple, like, sort of mattered in a college basketball way. It would be nice to see them in the tournament. I think
it'd be fun.
Yeah.
All right, I love it. Fired up.
We'll talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah, you. No, leg face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
That's a plan B.